traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, racing fans, Steve Wolf here for Flying Turns, and with us, the founder of the International Equine Network, Scott Miller. Scott, how are you going? Good?
I'm going good, Steve. Thanks for asking. It's pretty good here in South Florida. You know, we're just trying to beat this virus thing, and it looks hopeful, so, you know, we can get back to racing. How's it looking in the standardbred business there, Steve?
Well, things are hopeful. Just this past week in Ontario, they're looking hopefully by June 15th to have racing, of course, without fans. In Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Horse Racing Commission has reached out to the governor, Tom Wolf, and they're seeking their approval for racing and making sure, of course, the stipulation is that all safety measures will be put in place to ensure the well-being of everyone involved. I think all the states are looking to do that. And shortly, folks, we want to tell everyone we have some special guests on today. One of them is Jason Senamore, the general manager of the Meadowlands in New Jersey. He'll be talking about what's the state of racing there. We also want to let our fans know that they can call in anytime with questions today. And the phone number to call in is 323-744-4831. If you've got questions for either Scott or myself or for our guests on today, please make sure you give us a call. But back to the racing situation, numerous stake races have been postponed, of course, as no one really knows when racing's going to happen. A number of minor stake races have been canceled also. And it seems that us in Florida, we're the only state that has any type of racing action, qualifying races. And there's four different tracks in the state of Florida who each week now are racing, having anywhere from 9 to 11 qualifiers. And what that tells me is that these people are getting ready. They want to return to racing. They want to make sure their horses are ready to race.
Well, Steve, that qualifying racing that they had at Olympia down there, that was, I believe, the first two-year-old qualifiers of the season, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And while the time of the race may not ever be a record of any sort because they only went in 2:19 and 2, and I know there were really strong winds out there at the qualifiers, it was still the first two-year-old to show a race line. Name of the filly, a pacing filly by the name of Princess Royal. She won the race handily, but again, the time of the race is only 2:19 and 2. They're really, it's the month of May. They're not going that super fast, but that was the first two-year-old race that we've seen this year.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of the races there, Steve, I was kind of thinking this morning as I was going about my duties here at Sunshine Meadows about the races. And I looked at some of the trainers and they looked deep in thought. And I was just thinking, if they're wondering, where are they going to point their horses to? What races? You know, are they going to have to give up one big race to go to another? You know, that type of thing. You think that's going to happen?
Absolutely, it's going to happen with this backlog of events and races being postponed. Of course, all the race secretaries are going to try their best to not have conflicts so that they can get the top horses to their events. But I really don't think that's going to happen this year. I think there's going to be numerous conflicts, and just as in the thoroughbred racing, or more so in thoroughbred than harness. The harness people are now going to really have to pick and choose the best race for their horse because they've got a limited season. You know, the average harness horse, a stakes, let's say a three-year-old stakes colt, he could race anywhere from 19 to 25 times in a year. And I know the thoroughbreds do not race that many times in a year, especially a three-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, one of the things I was thinking is, do you think that this delay in the racing has tarnished or tainted any of the big races? You know, like, well, like say, for example, with the thoroughbreds, you know, Churchill said September 5th, and now they're in a quandary to what do they do about the Preakness and the Belmont? You know, all of a sudden, you know, the Triple Crown doesn't have that much meaning anymore, you know, because it's not in the traditional time manner. And, you know, they don't know whether they're going to run the Preakness in July or October, you know, and the Belmont's still up for grabs. So you think that's going to affect the harness industry like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything is topsy-turvy. I mean, where's the baseball season, basketball, ice hockey? I mean, they're all, everyone is going to be, you know, put out of place, and schedules are going to have to be really, you know, adapted, whether, you know, if there's a baseball season, are they going to have triple headers instead of double headers? I mean, it's going to happen in all the sport that way. The only place, though, I have to admit, where racing has not skipped a beat at all is in Sweden. And that is literally the only country that has not had any lockdowns during the pandemic. They've had fanless racing, and they're still planning on hosting their elite race called the Elite Lop at the end of May. But then from a capitalistic point of view, the racing in Sweden is currently enjoying a 600% increase in wagering, which, you know, when it comes to a bottom line, that's an unbelievable figure. They're handling millions and millions of, just like Gulfstream Park and a couple of the other tracks, they're handling millions of dollars on their race cards.
All right. Well, you know, one of the things that was interesting is the television contracts, and this is for all sports. They have to go back and renegotiate the contracts, you know, with the racetracks as far as television rights are concerned. And I think that's one of the things that's going to be like a problematic with the Triple Crown, maybe the Hamiltonian, you know, the Breeders' Crown, is those contracts are voided now. So they have to go back in with the television networks and renegotiate the contracts. And I tell you, you know, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt because you're not going to get the big dollars like you normally would, you know, if there wasn't, you know, a virus.
No, and I'm sure, I mean, as hopefully when times get better, they're going to work it all out. I mean, one way or the other, hopefully these events will take place. And if there's conflicts, well, then that's why they invented the DVR for your TV. But some of these events may not be on national TV. They may have to be pushed to their affiliate sports channels. CBS is a big one. And this is something we can talk with Jason Settimore, our special guest, in a few minutes. I mean, what's the story? Is that, you know, is the Hamiltonian the first Saturday in August going to take place, or is it going to be delayed? And if that's going to affect the Triple Crown for trotting races, or the same with pacing races, how far can you postpone events and not, you know, get in the way of the Breeders' Crown that comes at the end of October? A lot of these questions will be answered, you know, in time, but we just don't know yet.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got a lot of people that have left Sunshine Meadows and headed up north, you know, both show horses and thoroughbreds and, you know, the standardbreds. And I kind of looked at some of them today and spoke with a few trainers, and, you know, they're kind of saying, boy, are we doing the right thing by leaving? You know, what's out there? What's ahead of us? You know, they don't even have an idea. And, you know, it makes it kind of tough to make decisions, you know,
But I have a couple of announcements that we can talk about here. I want to get in before our guest comes on. Okay. Number one, the USTA's greatest harness horse race competition of all time has come down to the final two horses. And this past week, the world champion trotting mare, Moneymaker, beat Niatross in the voting. Stallion Niatross, and Muscle Hill, again, another world-class stallion and racehorse, he beat Mac Lobel, which I can sort of understand in the voting because Muscle Hill, to me, is probably one of the greatest harness horses ever in the sport, just from his racing ability and his as a stallion. He has produced numerous million-dollar winners and stallions over his career. But it's Moneymaker versus Niatross, and that's going to happen this weekend, and we'll have the results for you once it happens. That'll be interesting. You know, who's going to win it? We'll see.
Wonder if that'll boost the, the argument that, hey, I told you I was right.
Yeah. But you know what? I've liked Muscle Hill since the start of the competition. So, but I also think he's the number one seed in his area. And again, he was such a superb animal. But other news, which just came out, and this is hot off the press, and that is the Little Brown Jug Society has announced that starting in 2022, in 2 years, that they're going to allow supplemental payments to get into the race. Since the race's existence, the only way, if you didn't make yourself eligible as a yearling, you couldn't be eligible for the Little Brown Jug. And then later on, they eventually said that if anyone wins one of the Triple Crown races, the Cane Pace or the Messenger, or the North America Cup or the Meadowlands Pace, that they would allow that race winner to supplement to the Little Brown Jug if that horse was nominated. But now that won't be necessary in 2 years from now, as people will be able to pay. It's $45,000 to supplement to the race, which goes for total purses of anywhere between $650,000 and $800,000. So that's a positive thing because somebody could have a two-year-old that didn't race, comes back at three, and he's sensational, but he can't go in the jug because they never allowed supplemental payments before, and now they're going to do that.
Well, if they do that, Steve, would they have to put a cap on how many horses would enter the jug? You know, like the Derby, they take the top 20 and point getters.
Yeah, that's going to happen. And actually, they use a 5-day box, an entry box, and that should there be more than 24 horses entered who were originally nominated, that could knock out a supplemental entry.
Oh, that's going to be tough. It's going to be interesting. When will this take effect now?
In 2022.
Okay.
So we've got a little
time to plan.
Time to plan. In other words, they have to let the current conditions run their course until they can, institute a new rule like that. So they've got a little bit of time, and of course there'll be some talk about it, but there has not been that many horses, 22 entered in a Little Brown Jug. I wasn't able to look it up yet, but it's been quite a number of years since that many horses have entered. So I think if somebody's going to supplement, they're going to be awful good, and they're not going to have to worry about there being that many horses entering the jug.
Okay,
go, folks.
Steve.
Well, at this time here, we want to introduce Jason Settimore, the COO, I think I have that right, and GM of the New Meadowlands Racetrack. He's also the vice president of racing at both Tioga and Vernon Downs. We've been friends for many, many years, and we want to welcome you to Flying Turns, Jason.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome, Jason.
So tell us, we're doing good. We want to know what you've been kept busy doing with the pandemic up in New Jersey.
Well, there's plenty for me to do. I talk with my staff each day, still have calls. I still go to the office a couple times a week, clear my desk off. So there's been plenty for me to do, but I'm stir crazy. I'm ready to get back to harness racing, that's for certain. It's hard for me to believe that, you know, we've been in this situation with no live harness racing at the Meadowlands since Friday, March 13th, when we closed the doors for live racing, and then we closed the doors on Monday for simulcasting. So it's been kind of hard for me to stomach at times, but, you know, I try to find things to do. You know, but it's difficult, that's for certain.
So you're allowed to go to the offices at the Meadowlands? I mean,
yeah, I go to the office, yeah, and we do, you know, if there's anybody out there, we do the 6-foot distancing and all that. So we sign in, sign out, some of the protocols that we put in place at the very beginning, because there are still things that I like to be able to get done. So, you know, at the end of the day, not there very often, and when I am there, it's usually in and out pretty quickly, get what I need to, and move, get back home and get the things done there.
Well, with everything going on and some of the states talking about a possible return to fanless racing in June, the outlook in New Jersey is not that good, is it?
Well, I don't want to say that. We have a request into the governor's office in both New York and New Jersey requesting to turn to live racing without fans. You know, so I don't want to speculate on how quickly it will be or how much longer it'll be. We're trying to take every precaution necessary to make sure that when we do return to live racing, we'll return without fans more than likely, you know, that we're still taking every precaution that we possibly can in order to protect our employees and our horses and women.
How about the outlook up in New York for Tioga and for Vernon?
Same thing. We have a request into the governor's office, and the you know, we'll see where it goes. I think that, you know, in following what Jeff has said as well, you know, I think that you'll see that New York will probably open up in different regions at a time where there's far less cases of the coronavirus. So I'm hoping that, you know, the upstate part, Tioga and Vernon areas, will be the first one so that we can get back to live racing without fans. But everything is still up in the air. Those requests are both into the state of New Jersey and to the state of New York. And, you know, I've been talking with the different jurisdictions and the regulators and trying to come up with the best plan to make sure that everybody is protected when eventually we do go back to live racing. So there's a little light at the end of the tunnel because they are working and willing to work through these situations. So we'll see where we get. I think we'll start to see, start getting some answers over the next 10 days or so.
I guess the Jason, next question, go ahead, Scott.
Jason, Scott Miller here. I got a question for you. Are you concerned about having enough horses to fill the races once you get back to racing?
Oh, obviously. I mean, there's all these guys. Look, at the end of the day, that's what everybody is concerned about. We're concerned about the safety and health of everybody, obviously, first. But we're concerned as well that these horses, you know, continue to be trained and taken care of. And we need to be able to get people back to live racing. So, but no, I don't think that to answer your question, I don't think there'll be issues with being able to fill races. I think everybody's got these horses trained and ready to go where they need to be, and they're just waiting on the green lights from what I've been able to tell from talking to different trainers throughout the states that, you know, they've got these things trained and ready to roll.
Thanks. Well, that's what my big question was. Go ahead, Steve.
No, Jason, I was going to ask next about the stake races and, of course, the premier harness race of all time, the Hamiltonian, usually the first Saturday in August at the Meadowlands.
I think it's the second Saturday this year. So it's the eighth this year because the first one falls on the first, I believe.
Have you had talks with the Hamiltonian Society about what to do if racing continues to be delayed?
John and I have spoken several times throughout the last several weeks, and Moira as well. You know, we have not put any contingency plans in place at this point. We're hoping that by that time, you know, we'll be back to racing again. So, but, you know, if this thing goes on, you know, through the month of June, and we're going to certainly have to start talking about different ways to do things. But I still fully plan on the Hamiltonian being this year when it's scheduled. So we'll have to see where it goes from here.
Well, yeah, we have to hope for the best for that. And of course, in New Jersey, they allow sports wagering, and the Meadowlands facility was until the virus hit, the number one sports betting facility around.
Yeah, we were number one sportsbook facility in not just North America, but throughout the world. So from a retail standpoint, and then we were also, things are gangbuster from an internet perspective as well. So we're all eager. We're very eager to get back and going again. But again, we want to do this with safety in mind for everybody. That's the main goal, in keeping everybody healthy throughout this. So you know, we're taking all our cues from the governmental offices and from the CDC. It's a state and local health.
Well, we can understand that. I mean, safety comes first over everything. So I guess once the people are able to start socializing and getting back together, you can look at having the sports book back open again and your OTB parlors.
Right. I think everybody, you know, even, you know, we're talking just about harness racing here and horse racing in general, but you know, I think everybody is in limbo right now. I mean, I don't know that the NBA really has a plan, Major League Baseball, because they don't know when these states are going to return to normal. I'm hearing some rumblings out of Major League Baseball that they may play out in Arizona, they may play in Florida. You know, so we'll have to see as to how that goes as the different states start to open up and remove the restrictions and see where and if there are continued spikes with this. So we're living in a time that none of us, you know, look, I never certainly thought on March 13th that when I woke up that morning that things would happen so quickly, and you had to do things by, realistically, at the end of the day, I was doing things by gut reaction and, you know, getting our properties closed up. So, you know, I don't know that anybody really has quite knows definitely where we are and where we're headed from here.
No, we definitely can understand that. And down by me in Florida, they've opened up most of the state except for down in South Florida, and primarily because of the mass population down here and the number of infected people and deaths. So I know that's a tough thing for you being in New Jersey and on the cusp of New York, where the majority of the carnage has taken place. But Jason, let's take to a more fun note here. We want to ask you about the USTA's Greatest Horse Challenge, and it's down to the final between Moneymaker or Muscle Hill. Who do you think the fans are going to vote for?
Muscle Hill.
Okay. I agree with you just based on what the horse is, but it is a fan vote, and Moneymaker was quite the fan's horse for so many years.
Right. No, Moneymaker, we even have a barn up at Vernon Downs named Moneymaker. So Gill. That was a lot of fun that we had with Moneymaker when she was around, and I think it was Julie Crone that also wrote her Under Saddle, correct?
Right.
Correct.
Down in setting that world record, which was an unbelievable, a different event for harness racing because, of course, we were not that used to watching somebody ride a trotter as opposed to drive one.
Right.
But the competition has been fun with all those great horses, and I'm sure they're going to improve on it for a time to come. And it's been great, a lot of these simulated races and contests during this time period to see all these and remember all these great horses.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I was on the other night with Greg Blanchard and Roger Houston and Greg Gangle, and we got to talk a little bit about our favorite races of all time, and of course mine is always and always has been and always will be Lifesign, followed mostly by Wiggle and Jiggle It in the Jug. But at the end of the day, look, I wish I had more answers for you guys, but we're taking all of our cues from the regulators and the CDC and the state and local health officials. And, when we get started back, we eventually will. We're all in this together. And when we get started back and headed in the right direction, I look for, everybody to rally around one another like we always have and continue to move forward.
Well, Jason, we want to appreciate you taking the time and come on the show with us. Hopefully we're going to have you back later on this summer with the announcement about live racing returning. So we want to wish you all the best.
Love that.
Okay. But thank you for coming
on. The sooner the better, guys. That would be best. So.
That's right. And then you won't be stuck with Nick Salvi so much.
Exactly.
Okay. Jason, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good one.
Stay well.
Take care. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay,
well,
Scott,
Steve,
there you go.
That kind of hit the nail on the head.
It is. I mean, it's everything is up in the air. That's all you can say that's true. And
right.
We just have to wait and see and hope for the best.
I think you said it all, Steve, is that, they're in a position to where they're prepared to open. They weren't really prepared to close, but they did that, pretty quick. And I think he hit the nail right on the head. They're ready to go whenever they're given the green light.
Exactly. So, and I think all the tracks are getting prepared that way. There's a lot of stuff has to be done, and I wasn't going to get into bare-bone details with Jason about it, but, whether they're going to be testing every trainer, every driver, every groom that's going to come to the paddock, do the fever check, do the questionnaire, whether they're going to ask for, have you been tested for corona? Do you have a result test that shows negative? Or there's just so much going to have to happen in order to resume racing, and that's without the fans. I'm sure it's going to be some time. Go ahead.
It'll be interesting when you without the fans, how much will the whole situation change when you do have fans that come there? That's a whole different level.
Exactly. I think once the the virus conditions are lifted and people can be able to be with each other, let's call it co-mingling per se, I think they're going to come back to racing with a vengeance. It's like they haven't had it. They haven't been able to hear the hooves or the smells of the racetrack and the fans cheering and everything. But I think for the most part, most racetracks have some sort of an OTB or internet wagering that they can perform on, so that there's going to be handle coming in, and that's going to be the most important thing, to get purses going so that horsemen can race and earn something, and owners get a return on all these months that they've kept their horses in condition, because we got to remember horses got to be fed, watered, and taken care of 7 days a week, 24/7. They're like newborns. They need constant attention.
Right. Well, you know, like I've talked to several of the simulcast companies in the last couple of weeks, and their main thing is distribution. You know, they have their own website. You can go to that website, but they always need to add more. And their concern was the television aspect of it. You know, television is a great boost for racing. You know, they had the virtual Kentucky Derby last week. Its Secretariat had beat 18 or 17 Kentucky Derby winners in a virtual race. And that was tremendous.
Yeah, it's a good thing they didn't have real wagering on it, because the track would have lost money. There would have been a minus pool, because I think everybody in the world was going to pick Secretariat because he was just the greatest.
Oh, you're exactly right. You know, and but you know, they were just, you know, trying to figure out how they can do it. And like on our website, IENTV.org, we're playing a tour of Churchill Downs. And it's a video tour of Churchill Downs. It's 49 minutes long. And, you know, it's a great way to see the track. And they produced that piece so that they could get it out to any and everybody they can, hoping that they will draw people back to Churchill Downs when this is over, you know, to take the backside tours, to come visit, you know, eat, you know, and do, you know, the things that you can do at Churchill. But that was their main concern, is will they ever get the TV revenue back?
Right. Well, that's a tough call. You know, thoroughbred racing, of course, has a major edge in popularity, and thus a major edge over harness racing in television coverage. But in essence, there's so many tracks out there, and until they can get fans to be able to start wagering on them, they need to back both breeds, all breeds, the show horses, the equestrians, the rodeo, polo, all of the disciples or disciplines need to understand that the racing is coming back, and they need to really promote the hell out of it when it does, because when racing is able to come back, it'll be fanless, of course, but once the fans are allowed, the same as Jason had talked about the possibility of a baseball season starting in Justin, Arizona, everyone in the world's going to be fighting for people's attention.
Oh, you know that. You know, I was thinking about CBS Sports. Back in the day, their horse racing coverage was really good. And for the Hamiltonian and the Jug, they had an announcer called Haywood Halebroom. And this guy really put some stories together for the racing end of it. And I think now, you know, to help, you know, harness racing, the show horse industry, you know, all the equestrian events, it's going to be back to the television again. That's going to have a real value to it, because nowadays you can practically watch any kind of video project anywhere in the world at any time of the day. And I think that the racing industry and the show horse industry is going to capitalize on that. And I think you're going to see some pretty good programming coming up here, you know, in the summer and the fall.
I agree with you, because I think racing is already racing in the state of Florida, Gulfstream Park in Tampa Bay. They're already going. I mean, they're fanless, but they're quote fans are wagering millions and millions of dollars on them, and Los Alamitos and some other tracks, mostly thoroughbred out there. There are no harness tracks going. They've already got an edge on everybody else because they're racing, and all they have to do is you know, promote it even more as the other tracks come back, because I think they're going to be coming back before some of the major sports are.
Right, right. Well, I'm getting so excited about it, coming back. I don't know which I'm going to watch. I might have to buy two or three TVs to watch, football on one, baseball on the other, and horse racing on one to satisfy my needs.
There you go. Well, you know what? Laptops are pretty cheap these days. You'll just have to have three of them or get three monitors or four monitors, and you can switch back and forth. And, he's going to have a lot of action. But remember, you're still got to work, too.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, nobody's ever accused me of doing that, Steve. That's for sure.
You said earlier that people were getting ready to leave Sunshine mm-hmm. Meadows, but with literally almost no racing going on, why are they even considering leaving and going up north, which to me, their lockdown is going to be longer than it is elsewhere?
That's one of the things that I couldn't understand, and nobody here has really answered that question. I think they're getting a lot of pressure from some owners about, going up north. I think they want to be up there. They want to be one of the first ones out of the gate, you might say, because they know it's going to take a while to recoup what they've lost. And if they can get up there and start racing right away, that might help them, recoup some of that money that they have lost.
No, that's true. But as with all businesses and with millions and millions of people who are trying to get unemployment or don't have access to it and are hurting for money from this pandemic, I just wonder, how quick they're going to be able to go out and do things. And I think that's going to take a real hindrance on once things start to open up on, where people are they going to have the disposable income, for wagering as opposed to buying food?
Well, yeah, again, what do you do? How do you spend your money? Instead of getting a 4-piece box of chicken, you might have to get a 2-piece so you can go bet on the race.
At least for the foreseeable future, I'm sure you won't have to pay for a program, because I'm sure the tracks will be giving them out for free and trying to create interest. And as mm-hmm. we said earlier, obviously there are tons of race fans around the world looking for action when a place like racing in Sweden shows a 600% increase in handle. So it's unbelievable. Right. And I was talking, I actually have a cousin of mine who was very, very big in the California thoroughbred industry by the name of Steve Schuline. And I talked with him last night, and he just couldn't fathom how Los Alamitos, 30 miles away from Santa Anita, has been able to race with fanless racing, yet there are two different counties. And the county that Santa Anita's in won't allow fanless racing. Yet 30 miles away, they do have it.
Yeah, and it just makes you wonder,
Well, I have to, you have to think of the positives. And the positives are that, we're talking thousands and thousands of people being gainfully employed because we're allowing fanless racing, and that could be, of course, a small start to the economy getting back again. So I would hope the sooner these governments decide that it's okay to have the fanless racing, it's going to be better for the country as a whole.
Yeah,
and the industry. Well,
I've been on the internet looking at racing in Sweden, and it's phenomenal. What they're doing there. They seem to have a pretty good control on it. They've got plenty of venues to go to. Maybe we can get back and follow the protocol they have and get back to racing.
Well, I think that's what's going to happen. And if you watch some of the races, you even see that some of the drivers, you know, their weather is much nicer there this time of year. Some of the drivers are actually coming to the winner's circle, and they have masks on.
Yeah. But, you know, you hit an important point there that's good for the racing end of it. We are getting into better weather and across the country, and I think that's going to have a big effect on it, you know, opposed to it being in the middle of winter.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Steve, we got Cameron Sharman on with us today. She is the owner of the Sweat Shack in Delray Beach, Florida. And Cameron is a personal trainer. She's a top-notch equestrian. And we can ask her all kinds of questions about horses and about her shop in particular and how things are going for her. Cameron, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Good, good. Steve Wolf is with us. And we're going to ask
Cameron.
You a bunch
Welcome
of questions.
Welcome aboard.
Hello. Nice to be here today.
Well, we're glad to have you on the show here. But go ahead, Scott. You know better.
Well, I'm going to find out just exactly what she's doing out there at Sunshine Meadows because a lot of the riders and the trainers were talking about the new project she's got going there, and it seems to be going pretty good. Is it going good, Cameron?
Yeah, actually, so far it's going great. We're still following regulations put in by the government, obviously, with the virus and everything that's going on right now. So I have everything blocked off by hours, and they put their name on the hour that they want to come for that day of the week. That way we don't have more than seven people in there. The gym can accommodate six or seven people max, but no more, which is perfect because, obviously, right now we can't be in any more groups bigger than 10. So far everybody is respecting that. They're doing really good about communicating with me, or if they have a hard time communicating with me, just because I'm still learning Spanish. Mario with Carriage Hill and Barn One has been a tremendous help as well. Everybody's enjoying it.
Okay. Chantel, tell us more, give us the description of what the Sweat Shack does.
So with me personally and the Sweat Shack, it is for personal training and equestrians, obviously, since we are on an equestrian facility. My goal is to focus on the riders, and if they have any weaknesses that either they know about, they don't know about, and my job is to go through a couple evaluations, see if I find any muscle imbalances that they might have, being maybe they have a stronger or more dominant leg. Like, for instance, my left leg is my dominant leg. So I do a lot of unilateral work, which just means single leg work in the gym, single leg exercises, if you will, to strengthen my right leg. And I do the same thing with our riders here and even our grooms because they have to be strong as well. So then once I figure out what kind of possible muscle imbalances or past injuries they might have had, I come up with a nice program. I make sure that we start from the basics, from stabilization, then move up into the strength level. And if they're interested, then we'll move up into the power level, which is kind of like plyometric exercises like box jumps, jump squats, etc. And I just make sure that their kinetic chain or the human movement system, which is basically just your whole body, is nice and equally balanced on both sides. Your balance is good. Your body position in the saddle is also something that I look at. So if you are, like I said earlier, dominant on one side, you're obviously going to have a more dominant side in the gym and in the saddle. So we work on exercises that are going to improve your body position. And, of course, strength and endurance, because it's hot here in Florida. I'm sure you guys are fully aware of that. And I know last summer was a little bit of a challenge to sit there and ride 3-4 horses a day in the hot heat. My endurance level got a little bit lag in there just because I was less conditioned than what I am right now. So endurance and conditioning is also something that I really focus on. And with the equipment that we have in the gym right now, it's great. We have 2 battle ropes. We have a TRX, which is just basically kind of like a little rope with some handles at the end that you can mount to the wall to do jump squats, single leg movement, face pulls and stuff like that. We have a squat rack, leg press, leg extension, pull up and chin up machine, a cable tower, hamstring curl machine, back extension machine, treadmills, bicycles, medicine balls, stability balls, yoga mats, anything that you would have in your normal LA Fitness or Planet Fitness, we have the same thing, just in a little bit of a smaller scale, more personable.
And
tell them about the treadmill.
I'm sorry.
I want to tell you about the treadmill, Stevie. You'll like this. What did they face out there? You can watch the horses jump and train while you're training yourself, right?
Exactly, yes. If, for instance, if a parent wanted to come and watch their kids ride, our cardio area in the gym is actually facing our riding arenas. But, as a matter of fact, I believe it faces rings 1, 2, and 3, and then the little small ring right there, and then the treadmills also face out into the big open pasture there. So you have numerous angles of nothing but riding arenas, kids riding around, having a good time. And the sweat shack is actually underneath 2 shade trees, and the breeze and the shade, it's just the perfect temperature in there all the time. Doesn't matter if it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 7 o'clock at night. It's really, really nice in there. We do have updated fans and LED lights in there. So you wanted to come train at night, your kid has a later lesson, it's available, it's nice, it's convenient, and so far, like I said, it's really great. It's going really great.
Well,
how can we get a hold of
this? Yeah, I think this sounds super, and it's right there at the Sunshine Meadows. Tell us, Cameron, how can people contact you? Do you have a website, phone number? We'll let you shout it out.
I do have a cell phone number. I have an email, and we do have a Facebook page. My cell phone number is 502. It is a Kentucky number. It is real. 502-671-9831. My email is my first dot my last name, so cameron.shireman@yahoo.com. Or the Facebook page is literally just The Sweat Shack. You can look us up on Facebook under The Sweat Shack.
Well, I think that's great. And especially this time of year outside, all you have to do pretty much is stand to sweat a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you're looking to sweat a few pounds off, just go and stand out in the sun for about 15 minutes, and you'll definitely get that done.
Well, I can see being
Steve,
on the
You know what I like about this sweat shack is Cameron is also an equestrian herself. She rides, and she comes from an equestrian family. So, you know, she understands when somebody comes to you and says, you know, I feel weak here or there. You know, she's been there and done that. And that's what really makes this whole sweat shack unique, is because she understands what the the equestrian's going through, and that can help speed up whatever they're trying to accomplish.
Oh no, I can understand that, Cameron. Let me ask you this: there's an awful lot of harness racing people there at Sunshine Meadows. Have you gotten any of the trainer drivers or grooms from the standardbred industry using the sweat shack?
Yes, we do have a couple of the grooms, not so much the trainers, just because I think they stay busy with the horses and the owners. But yes, a couple of the grooms have come in there and taken advantage of it, and they haven't had any complaints with me So, and I see them in there. They everybody goes in there and they put in good work. If they have questions on exercises or how to use the equipment, they ask me. So it's really nice that they're going in there. They're taking advantage of it. And it's nice for me to have the background that I do in courses and personal training, because if they have a question, I usually have an answer. So it's nice to have the harness people in there and the hunter jumper people in there. I have two different disciplines, and for the most part, it all makes sense to me, the questions that they ask. Sometimes they're asking me, oh, well, how do I help my posture if I'm sitting in a cart all day? Or just questions like that that aren't normal questions to be asking in a gym. So I can kind of relate that, going back to the kinetic chain and the human movement system, like, okay, well, this is how you're sitting all day. We're going to do exercise to kind of lengthen those shortened, or what we call in the fitness industry, overactive muscles, and then we strengthen the weakened or underactive muscles, and vice versa with the hunter jumpers. They might have, like I said earlier, a dominant leg that they need to kind of shorten muscles and lengthen muscles, strengthen muscles, and get everything back in the proper alignment and position.
Steve, you know what's a good thing about having her here is when she gets most of her clients in there, she can go out and she can actually watch them ride, you know, and see, you know, how they're riding it. And like she said, if their posture is not right or what have you. And then, you know, 300 feet later, she's back in the gym, you know, correcting that for them. So, you know, that's really a good thing that we have here.
I think this is a great service. I'm, you know, of course, we've seen it for personal trainers, for everyone in fitness, and especially for the professional sports. But, so why not for our professional equine sport industry? And I think that's great, whether they're jockeys or equestrian riders or harness racing. If you're any part of it, then they need to come over and see Cameron, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was the whole point of kind of wanting to specialize in equestrians, because you don't really hear of a whole lot of personal trainers for equestrians, and it's definitely more needed in our industry. So I really appreciate this interview with you guys, letting me kind of lightening the equestrians on personal training is something that I think needs to be more talked about.
So, Cameron, tell us about your background.
My background, well, I was born, like Scott said, into an equestrian family up in Kentucky. My grandparents are Hall of Fame quarter horse breeders. They ride barrels and pole horses, quarter horses. My mom still currently rides barrels, poles, ranch. I'd done barrels and poles as a young kid, and then I kind of ventured out a little bit, and I did Western Pleasure for a couple years. I jumped competitively for a year. And then in high school, in college, I did reining and Western Pleasure. And then after college, I dabbled with cutting horses a little bit. After that, I moved down to Florida about 2 years ago now, and I worked with some ranch horses for a little bit. And now I just ride whenever I get the chance to be honest. I've been so busy with the gym, and I just officially finished my personal training certification through NASM. So yeah, now I just ride whenever I get the chance, whether it's a hunter jumper or a little quarter horse.
How many horses do you have horses now?
I don't have any personally. I did have one in college. He was a little quarter horse, a little three-year-old that I started. He was really nice. His name was Huey, and now he is retired as a six-year-old, six-year-old now, actually, and he is just a trail pony. A little family friend has him.
Well, let me ask you this from the harness racing point of view. Have you ever been able to drive a horse?
No, you know, I have not got to do that. I have wanted to, but I just haven't had the opportunity to come available yet. But whenever I do, I'm definitely going to jump on it because it looks fun.
Well, I think that Scott should set you up with one of the trainers, which I'm sure he can, and get you out there on the track to give it a feel and see what it's like so that you can venture more into the personal training for the trainer drivers and, I mean, the grooms themselves you're familiar with, but to try and be able to talk with and get you probably do a lot of this with the trainers and drivers that need and want to keep in shape. And the best way to do it is to get out there and do it yourself, which you can do in harness racing.
Yes. No, I totally agree. Go. Scott, we're going to have to hook me up with one of our trainers out here because that you've got it. Hands-on experience is literally the best. And that's
right.
Definitely something that I would like to get into. So like you said, I can have a better understanding of what kind of maybe postural imbalances or muscle imbalances they might have due to sitting in the cart all day long. So that's definitely something that I have thought about.
Just if anyone tells you that a horse is a little bit of a puller, you don't want to get on them.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to go out there and get crazy. Maybe just like one of the older ones that's just nice and easy. That'd be a good starter.
Yeah, Steve, we got to get something down right here, right now with Cameron. 10 years from now, when we come back to interview her, which location should we go to? Because I see her having locations at every horse facility in the country eventually, franchising them.
Well,
the Sweatshack,
it's a great program.
Belmont.
You can get it syndicated and open other places up. I think that would be super. Especially when you're in a nice weather climate like South Florida, where you actually don't need a shack per se, but you can just set up the tents with all the equipment and do it all outside.
Yep, and we have been discussing that as well. There's a couple trainers that are interested in doing personal training with me specifically, but they don't have the time to travel to the Sweat Shack. Per se, so they have talked about me possibly bringing out a couple pieces of equipment and doing something called a HIIT circuit or a high intensity circuit, 30 minutes, get their heart rate up, help their metabolism, and burn off some calories and actually get the full effect because circuits are usually full body, upper and lower, rather than if you're just coming to personal train with me once a week, but you still come and do a specific program that I make for you. I split it up in upper days and lower days. So that has definitely been talked about. It's probably going to be in the works hopefully in the near future if everything with the virus and stuff kind of clears up a little bit. That would be fantastic. But it has definitely been talked about kind of venturing out a little bit.
Well, I think this is a great program you've developed, and I look forward to coming out and seeing it in person.
Yeah, well, we'll be happy to have you.
Well, Cameron, we want to thank you for getting on the show with us today. You really gave our listeners a lot of information. You know, hopefully they'll come out to see you. And, you know, like I said before, down the road we'll interview you again, you know, and see how things are going. We'll get you in one of the bikes out here and see what happens. And if you could give us your phone number one more time before we get off here, and how to get a hold of you for our listeners that didn't write it down.
Yes, sir. So my cell phone number that you can call me or text me anytime is 502-671-9831.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, thanks for being on the show with us. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Okay, you take care, Cameron.
You too. Y'all have a nice day.
Thank you. Well, Steve, I think we might have to go get in shape.
I think it's too late.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. I got enough pressure as it is. I worry about getting in shape. What are we going to talk about next week, Steve, on harness, on fine terms?
Well, hopefully we're going to here's some more positive news with some dates for the return of racing, especially in the for the harness and the thoroughbred. And we may have to try and talk and see about some of the big sales, too, and how that's going to be affected. You know, people are, at this time here, they're starting to fill the sales books, you know, looking at the possible yearlings for the 2021 sales that will be coming up. And I think we're going to dwell into that a little bit because that's another important aspect.
Right, right. Well, Steve, I want to thank our guests today. Want to thank you today, especially BBS and what all they do for us and everything. You go to bbsradio.com, you can see how you can listen to us through iTunes, iHeart, many, many different ways you can listen to our programming. And I look forward to next week, Steve, and I'll get the info on the sales for the thoroughbreds, and you do the standardbreds, and we'll see what we can pull together.
You got it. Good show, Scott.
Thank you, sir, for being here with us. You make us go.